I thought maybe I could at least get a discussion going this morning a little bit in just kind of responding to what Ryan brought up on Friday night for those of you who are here. I had a couple of things in my mind on Friday night. Nothing new or revolutionary that we haven't talked about before, but there was a flurry of comments t last Friday, which is unusual for us, and I didn't really say anything, but I was thinking a couple of things just for the sake of those who weren't connected or weren't here. He was kind of asking about how to be spiritually minded, how to be to not set our mind on things below, and to set it. There's a whole lot of scriptures that talk about that reality, about fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, or looking at things that are not seen, and not the things that are seen, or putting our mind on things above, not on things that are on the earth. Or there's a whole lot of scriptures that talk about those that reality, and then you kind of ask, like, how do you? He was kind of just presenting that subject as something to talk about on Friday night, and was saying, it's got to be more than just trying to force myself to think about like heavenly things, like Jesus on a throne or angels or whatever, and it's got to be also more than just trying to force myself to stop thinking about other things. And there were a couple things that, as I was sitting there kind of thinking about that, and I've thought about it a little bit since that meeting, but a couple of things that I would just offer as things that have helped me with that question, how to become a more spiritually minded or have your mind more in spiritual things. And one of them, not sure which one to start with, but I'll start with the one that I think is more misunderstood, and that is the need for, this almost sounds like a bad word that, I don't know, people have so much misunderstanding about it, but honestly, it's the need for discipline. And I know very well, from personal experience, that discipline is something that can be totally misunderstood and misused, and I think in most Christian circles that I talk to today, it's something that's almost entirely removed from Christianity. I think just as soon as someone begins to, I don't even think anyone even brings it up. At least I don't know. I only talk to certain people in certain circles, but I never hear anybody like just bring up the reality of discipline. There's a whole bunch of verses in the New Testament that talk about discipline, or even Paul rejoicing to see their discipline and their good order, and him talking about keeping his body under and disciplining his body and things like that. But there's also scriptures that talk about how harsh treatment of the body and self-imposed religion are not effective against the desires of the flesh. And so I think because we lean towards or desire more to abandon all discipline, I guess, we grab hold of a few verses, ignore some other ones, and just kind of assume that in the new covenant, discipline is not something that's involved with Christianity. And I just have to say that, like, first of all, I don't think that that's scriptural, and I also don't, that does not align with my experience as being someone that has been trying to give my heart to the Lord and follow him. I have found that discipline does have a really important place in my walk with Christ. But let me try to define what place it has, because that's where I think everybody has a tendency to run to extremes. The place that discipline has for me has nothing to do with me attempting through discipline to to, first of all, to win God's favor, or to put myself in a place where I am under more of heaven's notice, or proving my commitment or my zeal or something to him. I've been there. I've done those things. I really have. And I've given some years of my life to discipline in that way and found it to be, just as Paul said, with that mentality and for that purpose, I found it to be not productive against the desires of the flesh. How does he say that? It's in Colossians. I think it's the end of chapter two where Paul says something along those lines. These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom and self-imposed religion, false humility and neglect of the body, but are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. That's what I was trying to think of. No value against the indulgence of the flesh. And so discipline, trying through discipline to either to please God or to attain some kind of spirituality, as though harsh treatment of the body, or even just neglect, or even denying of self, is going to, by itself and of itself, like produce a work of grace in your heart, or a change, or spiritual mindedness, just because you're disciplining yourself. That doesn't work. And I think in that sense, it should be that idea of discipline, I think, should be discarded, because that's not what Christianity is. Here is what, in a few words, I believe Christianity is. Christianity is the life of Christ given to the soul in such a way, and the soul created and redeemed in such a manner in which the grace of God can actually work everything of the will and the nature of God in the soul, in the same way that a seed by itself, without any machines helping it, or wooden structures, I don't know, supporting, well, I guess you sometimes people do use structures to support plants and stuff, but you know what I mean. The seed of its own will and of its own power grows and produces a plant, and that plant produces an increase, and that increase produces fruit, and that fruit is pleasing to the one who planted the seed. Grace is has a work of that nature in the heart of man. And so Christianity, in a few words, is God planting Christ in the souls of man with an expectation and desire for a harvest of his nature, of his virtues, of his righteousness and purity and wisdom and truth, all manifested in and through the soil in which God has placed that seed. And yet, in the same way, in a very same way, like that, a farmer cannot in any way produce the growth of a seed, but has to every day, with a lot of labor and discipline, protect the growth and promote the growth and provide an environment for the growth in all kinds of ways that takes some sweat and some energy. In the very same way, I have found that the seed of grace that does all the work itself, and that comes from God, and that I can't get it, I can't make it grow, I can't do anything to change its will of what it wants to do in me, or how it's going to work in me. I can't do any of that. But I have found, in the very same way, that what effort or discipline cannot do by producing grace in me, the lack of effort and discipline and diligence can resist and frankly just stop the growth of grace in my own heart. And there is where I have found that discipline has a very important place in my life. Paul says in one place, do not provide for the desires of the flesh with regard to its lust. What does he mean by that? Well, I think he means something, again, we've talked about all these things numerous times. This is nothing new, but I think he means very clearly and very obviously what we see in the parables and what we see throughout all of the New Testament, what we see in the lives of Israel in the Old Testament too. What we see is quite simply that even though grace is a work of God, by his power, by his spirit, by his will, by his joy working in man, if man gives the only heart we have, and the only mind we have, and the only attention we have, and the only time we have to things that are of a contrary nature than grace, then those things grow in our hearts, and grace is impeded. Grace is the work of grace is grieved, resisted, quenched, put out like a candle. I mean, there's a bunch of different scriptural words that we could use. And that to me has become not just a doctrine in my head. It has become like the most obvious thing about what it means for me to follow Christ every day. If I am not careful to give the grace of God a nice clean passage to, first of all, stream into me and also to grow out from me. If I don't interact with the grace of God in a very particular way, if I don't love its appearing and choose it over all the time, not just like once or twice a week, but all the time, choose the grace of God over the desires of the preferences of my mind and my natural body many times. If I don't make myself get out of bed in the morning and spend time with the Lord, if I don't make myself stop relating to entertainment and food and all kinds of different things in the natural world, I find myself continually gorging on the things that become bigger in my heart, my mind, and in my time than the work of grace. And in that way, it's like there's a helium balloon in the heart of man that goes upward, and then there's like a rock in the heart of man that goes downward. I feel both of those things. They both naturally kind of want to go to where they came from. There's something of the flesh, of the dirt, of the dust in it, and it pulls downward. I feel it pulling downward. And then there's something else in me that I feel too. And I know you've all felt this. It pulls upward. But the upward pull, the heavenly-minded pull, is very often stopped and resisted. All you have to do is tie a little rock onto the helium balloon and it's not going up. And that's the same feeling that I feel when, and I think it, and I think, sorry, let me, that's the same feeling that I feel in my heart. And I think it's what Paul is talking about, or whoever wrote Hebrews, where he says, how does he say it? Laying aside every weight of sin, let us run this race. Laying aside, what are the weights? I think they're the things that keep us earthbound, and not earthbound. Obviously, our body is of the earth and is going to be of the earth until it goes away. But our heart isn't of the, it shouldn't be of the earth. Our mind shouldn't be of the earth. And yet there's something in, there's a helium balloon in the mind and the heart of man that can be felt. It doesn't pull hard, but it pulls constantly. And if it's given free passage, if it doesn't find obstacles in our day that are pulling it in a contrary direction, or smothering it with rocks, or burying it under heavy things, then I have found that it not only does it just does it rise upward more, but it also seems to rise upward with more inertia. There's an inertia to the downward pull of the flesh that gets stronger, like a train that's moving, and becomes hard to stop. There's an inertia of flesh. You've all felt it. You feed flesh, it gets bigger, it gets stronger, it gets harder to stop. The desires are bigger, the stronger. You kind of like to do something a little bit, you feed it a little bit, you kind of like to do it quite a bit more, you feed it a little bit more, and you can't stop thinking about it. And it's what's filling your mind and your thoughts and your time. You can't keep living that way and think that that's not going to affect the ability for the grace of God, the helium balloon to rise. And that's at least that's totally my experience. It's been my experience for a lot of years now. I have found that, first of all, that there is something in me that wants to arise. And I've also found there's a whole lot of things in me that want to keep it from arising. And therefore, I have found discipline. And when I say discipline, I just mean not doing what I want to do. Not giving my time to what I feel like giving my time to. At least part of me feels like giving my time to. Not investing my mind in doing things, reading things, watching things, seeing things, conversing about things, even being with people, specific people, that all I always notice to have the same exact effect on my upward call of God, my inward upward balloon. And there's a light that shows me those things. And yet some of those things are so normal. And sometimes in the minds of many people, so part of what their life has become, such a big part of what they actually do every day that they can't even imagine using a little bit of discipline to cut them off or to minimize them down into a much smaller portion or to change the nature of a relationship with something or to throw their TV in a lake like someone we know did. And yet I believe that that's exactly what the discipline of the New Testament is all about. Can you imagine Jesus walking as a man on earth, giving his time and his mind, his thoughts, investing his body, the desires of his body in ways that actually grieved or resisted or were contrary in any way to the will and nature of God? Isn't the life of Christ just exactly the opposite of that? Didn't he live in the world with the world under his feet, never ever doing his own natural will in the world? In any case, not even speaking words that came out from the flesh or from his own will or his own life as a man. Never. He never did it. He never slept. And I know that that's just an example, but he never slept when he was supposed to be praying. He never did. And I'll bet you that he spent many nights. It says, as was his custom, he went off to the mountain to spend the night in prayer or something like that. It says something about it being his custom. I guarantee you that his body wanted to sleep. And I'm not saying we all have to go to a mountain to spend the night in prayer, but I am saying that there's a principle here. That Jesus used, he must have used discipline. He must have disciplined his body, kept it under so that his spirit had freedom to obey and to interact and to rise above the things of this world. I think you can probably see that too in the fact that he was walking on water. Why didn't he sink? Why did Peter sink? That's just how he lived. And I think that that's what that's how Paul learned to live too. And I think that's what he means when he says, therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. Lest when I, an apostle sent by Jesus Christ, have preached to others, I myself, an apostle sent by Jesus Christ, who has experienced many things in the Spirit, should be disqualified. What did he understand about himself when he was writing, I could be disqualified? What did he understand about the necessity of keeping his body in subjection and disciplining it? I think he understood a lot. I think he knew his tendencies. I think he knew what the body was, where it came from, and how it had come into a curse and into a fallen condition, and how its appetites were fixed on things below. And if he didn't put a cross on those appetites, if he didn't sit across lay a cross on top of those appetites, then he could be the very people that he was crying about, where he says, many walk Well, first he says, brethren, join in following my example and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern. Now, clearly, he wasn't just talking about an outward mimicking of spirituality here. He wasn't talking about just look at how I pray and the words that I use and copy them. That's not what he was saying. Saying, look at how I live in this world. Look at how I put my body in subjection. Look at how I deny the pleasures of my flesh. Look at how I don't make provision for it. Look at how I don't allow myself to give my flesh and my time and my eyes and my thoughts to anything that keeps me down. Here, I mean, not keeps me down like in my keeps me feeling down, but keeps me down with my with as a creature of this world, as a man of this world. And then he says, for many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they're enemies of the cross of Christ. They're enemies of that thing which contradicts and rejects that nature, that earthbound nature. And here's why. Because what it says, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly or their appetite, whose glory is in their shame, and who set their mind on earthly things. And again, I mean, that's another scripture that I can't deny that Paul's talking about a way of living here, and a way of living that requires discipline. And so, getting kind of back to Ryan's question, like one of the things that I have found to be just super important is not putting an expectation in my mind being heavenly when I'm still giving it to things that are tying rocks onto my balloon. And that has taken discipline for me. I don't want to. Sometimes I start to do something, I pick up a little hobby or something, or I want to pick up a little hobby, and I start to notice how it affects my heart. I start to want to spend some time doing this thing, and I start to say, I could really get into this. This is an interest. It's nothing bad about it. I mean, I just, whatever it is, building birdhouses or something. I could build the best birdhouse around here, or, and so and I can, but before I do that, I need to watch these 19 YouTube videos and figure out exactly like the best way. And then what's the best wood? I should do some research on that. And pretty soon, this is a totally real, w weird, not real, weird example. But it's just an example, and I find, and there's nothing wrong with building birdhouses, and I think it's a great thing to do with kids, and I don't, or whatever. That's it's that's, but I have found in my heart something that starts to relate to something like birdhouses, in a way that I feel the light starts shining, the finger starts pointing, and I feel this caution. Warning light going off in my heart and says, discipline's needed here. Careful. Careful. There's nothing wrong with birdhouses except that they're not heavenly. The only thing wrong with birdhouse mass production is the fact that it's for birds. Birds are good. I like birds. You all know I like birds. I like animals. But birds aren't heavenly. They're not above, they're below. And I can have a relationship with birds or with anything that if it goes beyond its proper place in my heart, it's another stone tied onto my balloon. And I wish I would have thought of a better example, but that's just one example of ways where I just have in my own life, I have felt like careful. Jason, I feel that little warning. Careful here, careful there. Watch it. This is earthly. It's not bad, but it's earthly. If it's bad, of course it needs to be stopped immediately. I mean, bad in the sense that it by nature is contrary to the life of Christ. There's a lot of things that are by nature bad, but there's a ton of things that aren't bad in themselves, but your relationship with them can be very bad. A lot of things like that. I mean, some things that are absolutely necessary. And yet, your relationship with them can be bad. Anyway, I'm saying, I guess, the same thing in a bunch of different ways, but when I think of being heavenly minded, I can't imagine even being where I am now, let alone where I want to be, without exercising a lot of discipline and learning to live in a way every day where The things I give my will and my time and my heart to are very cautiously chosen, very carefully chosen, in such a way that I won't be choosing something that is a hindrance to my mind and my heart rising up and overcoming the world today. So that was the one thing. And the other thing is, I think I've stayed a lot shorter. But it's something we've talked about recently too. And it's just, I can't overstate how important it is to, there's a bunch of ways to say this, but I'll just say it like this, to maintain a continual inward interaction with Jesus Christ, to walk in his presence. To practice his presence, to not let yourself run away from him during the day or during the night or at any time. I mean, when I say run away from him, I don't mean stop believing in him. I don't think that that's much of a temptation, hopefully, for most of you. But what I mean is actually do something in a way that you are not conscious of or turning towards or wanting to be conscious of or at least wanting to be turning towards the presence of God, the fact that God is in you and all around you all the time. That there's nothing that you do, nothing that you think, nothing that you want, nothing that you say that is not perfectly and entirely known and watched by your creator. Everything. Every motivation, every intention, everything you say, the reason why you say it, what you do, all of your excuses for not doing what you should have done, everything is just right out there, laid out, spread out on the table before God's view. And I don't mean that to like so that you walk in horror, but that you walk in the presence of God. The one who has everything in view loves you. And is trying to redeem you from everything that is contrary to your happiness and to your goodness and to your righteousness. And yet we are so independent. Independence is an imagination. Do you understand that? We live in independence, but independence is just one of our many imaginations, which is not real. You're not independent. You're entirely dependent. And every feeling that you have of independence is just a great lie. There's nothing true about it. There is a God that is in you, around you, in everything you see and do and touch. He is not absent. You cannot flee from his spirit. You go up, go to the nothing, to go across the sea, and he's there. Go down to Sheol, and he's there. He's not always in the same place in the same manifestation of himself. There are many people who are allowing little or no manifestation of his nature in them, and yet he's there. There he is. He's not reigning there as the life that is the kingdom that is expressing its nature in wicked people, but he's certainly there. In him we live and move and have our being. And that scripture was stated not about Christians. It was stated about the Athenians who were worshiping an unknown God. In him we live and move and have our being. He's not gone from anyone. He's not experienced at all. His life and nature and love are not experienced by those who are not experiencing a birth of his nature in their soul. But there he is. And you're always with him. You're with him when you're talking. You're with him when you're with your friends. You're with him with your family. You're with him when you're in bed. You're with him when you're cooking. You're with him when you're eating. You're with him when you're taking walks. He's always there. And not only is he always there, just present, but the heart was actually in the beginning, the heart of man continually communed with God. In fact, the idea of not continually communing with God was an idea, I think, totally foreign and contrary to God's creation. Everything was made to have a communion in whatever measure it was possible to live in communion with God. In other words, we weren't supposed to have thoughts and desires and pursuits that were independent of God. That's a foreign concept that came into the world in the fall of man. And that's why everyone who comes back from the fall and is led back by the Spirit of God is led back into something the Bible calls abiding in Christ, abiding in the seed, walking in the light, walking in the Spirit, not just believing in the Spirit, not just believing in the light, you know what I mean? Not just believing that there is a vine that we can abide in. Everyone that is led by the Spirit into a real relationship with God is little by little, as fast as we're willing to be taught and changed and corrected, little by little brought into a relationship of abiding in a state of continual communion with a living God. And that is the other thing that I feel like is just so important. Discipline against the wrong part, and yet practicing the presence of God in the heart and doing nothing in his presence that you wouldn't want him to, first of all, that you wouldn't want him to see and notice if he were standing before you as a man, because he sees and notices it when he's not standing before you as a male. But also learning to interact with him about the minutiae of your day, about the things that are going on in your heart, about the fears and the insecurities that you have, about the desires and bringing them to him, the deeds, the just having your soul develop the habit of returning to the one that it went out from. See, that's what the fall of man was. It was a going out from a continual union and communion with God. And that's what Christianity is supposed to be restoring in our hearts. Not just right beliefs, not Bible doctrines, a continual union and communion and walking in his presence. Abraham, this is what God said to Abraham and Abraham in Genesis 17, Abraham, walk before me and be perfect. Walk before me. Don't ever walk without me being before you, right in front of you. Or David, I have set the Lord continually before me. I've set him there. He used to be behind me, but now I've set him before me. And that to me is I guess you could say just one of the ways of cooperating, maybe the greatest way, maybe the greatest way that I know of cooperating with that upward thing that I feel, that seed that wants to grow upward in my heart by walking in that continual state of communion with him. So I'll stop with that.